This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This Tuesday, the second American Ebola patient that was treated with an experimental drug arrived at Emory University. Their recoveries are still being monitored, and the effectiveness of their drug is still to be determined. How does the therapy work? Is it working? How many other treatments are there? Should we, could we make these treatments more widely available? Today, the World Health Organization put out a statement calling the outbreak an, quote, international public health emergency. Where does the drug fit in with all of this? That's what we're going to be talking about. Heinz Feldman is the chief of the National Institutes of Health's Virology Laboratory in Hamilton, Montana. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Feldman.
Hi.
Hi. Lori Garrett is the senior fellow for global health at the Council of Foreign Relations in New York. Good to have you back, Lori.
Hi, Ira.
Hi there. First of all, let me talk to you about this new issue, Lori, about the international public health emergency. What does that say about this epidemic?
The WHO Special Committee that convened for 2 days to try and to decide whether or not to make this historic declaration took several key factors into consideration. One was that it's in three countries with now apparently at least a small nexus of circulation in Lagos, Nigeria. So that's the most populous nation on the African continent. It's a nation of international trade and international travel. That means, by definition, that if we have real circulation in Nigeria, we have a global potential catastrophe. And on top of that, they took into consideration the conditions on the ground in the three key nations, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea, where desperate poverty has mixed with all sorts of cultural and political and social factors that are making it almost impossible to bring this epidemic to a halt. And the healthcare workers themselves, both local Sierra Leoneans, Liberians, and so on, and the International Volunteer Corps, which are overwhelmingly comprised of Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, these people are burned out and terrified. They have watched more than 60 of their colleagues die of infections acquired in treating patients, and they have been attacked physically by villagers that believe that the epidemic is not real or that there's all sorts of strange conspiracy ideas about what is going on. They are frightened. They are tired. They are exhausted. They are pleading for international replacement and for whole new cadres of people to come in. And I think, finally, the WHO Advisory Committee felt, look, we don't really have a coherent strategy for tackling this problem across national boundaries. We've never before dealt with Ebola outside of a single country. And frankly, in a highly trafficked urban center, as is the case in all three of these countries.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Feldman, do we know here in the States with these two the two patients being treated at Emory, is the treatment working?
I think it's still too early to say. We have to just wait what the final outcome is, which could take days, maybe even weeks. It just at this point it is too early to say. These are the two first people that ever got this specific drug, which composes monoclonal antibodies, and yeah, it's just a matter of time. To make any conclusions right now, I think, would be premature.
So it would be sort of silly at this point to say, take this drug and give it to everybody we could.
I wouldn't say silly. Of course, people are talking about it, but first, I think if we talk about any potential treatment, I think we all have to realize that anything of what is being put out there and discussed is of very short supply, has never been in humans, and it's very questionable what we can actually do with this. And I think this is forgotten by a lot of people, that we have only a few doses also, this particular product, even so the company is obviously trying to scale up production.
Laurie, would you agree then that that's not the way to go, is that you could not get this scaled up fast enough, even if it worked, to help the people over there in Africa?
There are three commercially invented drugs now out there for potential use. This is just one of the three. It happens to be the one that's been tried. It's been tried on two people. That is not a statistical database that tells you whether it worked or not. So whether any of the three actually works is completely hypothetical at this point. The second thing is, as far as I know, all three of the drugs are very difficult to manufacture and require the so-called cold chain. The cold chain is a very difficult process whereby every single step from the point of manufacture to the moment at which it's actually injected or ingested by the patient, every single step you must maintain, have electrical supply and maintain refrigeration at a given temperature, or the compound breaks down and may in fact become toxic. Well, these are countries where maintaining the cold chain just for routine child vaccination has proven extremely difficult. Liberia, in a single year, uses less electricity for its entire population than the city of New York uses in a single hour. So you're not talking about countries that had the capacity to execute experimental drug trials that involve widespread access to electricity and refrigeration. And then finally, there is an interesting petition now circulating among scientists. It's not yet been officially presented to WHO and other bodies. It calls for something kind of different. Instead of saying we should jump on these, you know, wildly mysterious drugs, the effects of which on humans are completely unknown, we should look at the already FDA-approved drug list and ask which things might potentially have benefit in fighting off an RNA virus and make those drugs available now on an emergency compassionate use basis. This would be everything from looking at drugs that alleviate fevers to drugs that may offset the impact of blood hemorrhaging.
You can finish your point.
I was going to say, I think that's a smarter way to start first. These are things that are already in the pipeline. They're already approved. We know they're safe, and they exist, and they're in inventory.
Dr. Feldman, as a virologist, does this make sense?
Well, I think that approach certainly has to be considered and actually is considered. We consider those approaches on a daily basis in experimental virology. My group in particular, but other groups as well, we've been looking over the years into drugs that are available. Our approach in experimental virology is, of course, to do the efficacy test and characterization, and a lot of these drugs have in our hands so far not shown the expected efficacy. But these approaches, I totally agree, we have to look at them, and I also totally agree with the comment on the existing, whether it's three or more than three drugs, production, storage, administration is a huge problem, and it makes not too much sense to just cry out, we need to use them. It needs to be done in a proper way. One comment to the drugs that are being picked from lists and drugs that have been in humans, as appealing that sounds, one of course has to also take into consideration, and Laurie mentioned it, that you know the situation in these countries very well described, at least from what I'm hearing and what I know, is if you give a drug, I think you better make sure that there is at least some data that would support this, because if it fails, it could set up for a reaction in the community and in the countries itself that could become even more hostile than it is at the moment. And I don't mean that word negatively. I do have sympathy and understand these people that are fighting this disastrous outbreak.
So in the minute I got left, Laura, are you saying then that the what's needed most now is to aid the relief workers who are exhausted and can't administer the basic things that need to be done?
In a nutshell, what we need is a clear plan of action, a clear hierarchy. Who's the general in charge of this medical army? We need to deploy thousands more individuals for everything from laboratory work to direct patient care to field work and epidemiology, public communication and education. But it needs to not be scattershot. You can't just throw every single NGO on the ground and ask people to risk their lives in a situation that isn't carefully orchestrated, carefully thought through, with coordination that goes above the three countries.
And who would do that? Who would do all that coordinating then?
Well, that's the disastrous situation we're in right now. Theoretically, WHO. In reality, WHO does not have either the legal authority or the budget to execute what I'm describing.
Hmm. It does not sound very hopeful, Dr. Feldman.
But I agree with Lori. Of course, I'm only covering a small portion of all of this.
Yeah.
I'm a laboratory researcher, but I have been in the field. I have not been deployed for this particular outbreak, but I've been at multiple outbreaks, Ebola outbreaks and others before. And also the point of the strategy, if we're coming back just to the treatment point, which is only a portion of the response, we should not forget that. I think if we come back to the strategy, I couldn't agree more with that. To just, say we need this and this needs to be applied, a lot of these projects, you need to have a strategy. You need most likely not just one product.
Yeah.
You have different personalities, different cultures, and you have patients in different stages of the disease. Then you have the healthcare workers that
right.
need to be protected. So vaccines also need to be coming into
All
the
right.
play
I'm
because
gonna,
they
I've,
might be
I,
helpful.
I'm going to have to interrupt it. Thank you, Dr. Feldman. Thank you, Lori Garrett.